Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. Joining me today are Hal and Rainer James.
Hey there.
Hey.
Kim and Glenn Fink.
Hey.
Hello.
Bob Griswold.
Hello.
And Mary's a little under the weather, so we'll have to ask all you folks out there, please make a pot of chicken soup and send it to Mary's house. Well, today we're going to talk about a topic that is very important to us and should be to you, and that's legislative action. And Rainer James is the chair of our state legislative action committee, and we're trying to get ready for January when new electees take office, and be ready to hit them right up front with things we'd like to see take place. And some issues have been on the table for a while. Some of them are new. But Rainer, you've put together a list here, you and your committee. And I'm just going to go down the list in the order you prepared it.
If you don't mind, I'd like to start at the very back of it first, because that's the thing that has most action going on right now to try to get in the saddle to deal with it.
Okay, well, why don't we
do the business of changing the way the Board of Education is elected in Craven County?
Yes.
If you'll remember, when we had the town hall and Senator Norm Sanderson and Representative Michael Speciale were there, John Bell was invited, but he was sick, so he didn't make it. He'd planned to come. One of the things that Norm had to say was that if we could get a petition signed by 10% of the voters of Craven County, he felt like we could get the Board of Education election changed from the way it is now, which is very confusing to people. Now, if there is a primary, that election takes place with voters who are in the district only of the candidates that they're choosing from among. But in the general election, every district that has a candidate running can be voted on countywide, and people are so confused about whether they're supposed to vote and whether they're not, and that sort of thing.
Right, and Craven County is one of the few counties that does it that way.
Mm-hmm. And there is a complicating factor in that countywide business. And I'm not sure quite how to word this, but if you take the schools themselves and the school board, among themselves they have a communication system. They represent a network of people who live all over the county who have an interest in what the school board does. So it tends to favor candidates espoused by the existing school board, which seems unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
So, how, I'm sorry, you...
Well, I wanted to add something to that. I've observed that the net result of that is that they're not responsive to the people who elected them.
Exactly. If they were elected within a district, they would feel they represented those people, and there would be true representation rather than the board banding together and being sort of us against the citizens. Maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but I don't think so.
Well, the two prominent members of the board have promised me that that's going to change with this, with the new board that's being installed. Most of them are coming back, but
I was going to say, unfortunately, the new board's the old board.
Exactly,
yes. Almost.
Yes,
but I think they did, during this past election, that they did realize that there are a lot of folks out there that are concerned enough to go to some meetings and question the way things are done, and so they're being a little more careful than they used to be.
This is Kim here. I just want to share that with this last election of school board candidates is a prime example of why we need to address this issue. If people would recall, we had a candidate in District 7, Sarah Benachek, who actually won the election. She was elected
a huge amount.
By almost 60% of the vote, and she was elected countywide. Now, in her district, District 7, she had to qualify by living there. However, she was unable to assume her seat because after she filed for candidacy, her family had decided to sell their home and relocate. Of course, at that time, they didn't know where they were going to relocate, and it turned out to be out of district.
Still within the county.
Correct. Our point is, it should be one way or the other. If she is going to represent her district, yes, she should live in the district. If she is going to represent the county, it shouldn't matter where in the county she lives.
Yeah. So they want it both ways, it sounds like.
And they got it both ways.
They've gotten it both ways.
Right? Now, my problem with what the school board has done is the man who was defeated, they reappointed. They didn't go out and ask for applications. They didn't try to recruit new blood. They didn't even let anybody know what they were doing. They had their work session meeting on Tuesday and decided what they were going to do with not even the opportunity for public input, which wouldn't happen until tomorrow night, Thursday night.
And he was defeated by a significant margin, which the message there was, we don't want this guy.
So if the parents of District 7 have a problem with this, I suggest you show up at a school board meeting.
Well, one thing that troubles me about it all is that Sarah Benischek was one of the candidates that we were able to vet. And she answered our questions, and she answered them all along the lines that we in CCTA, with our mission statement, would have agreed with.
Yeah,
and we're
sure
very
did.
Pleased with that. And then she got almost 60% of the vote, that's been said several times. And yet that meant naught to them when they decided who they were going to reappoint to that position.
Yeah.
I mean, what the citizens wanted seems to have been no concern to them.
Correct.
And that's really unfortunate. But to get back to where we are and where we're going with this, again, at our business meeting this past week, we voted to do the sort of petition that Norm Sanderson suggested we do. I have written a draft one and sent it to Norm, to Michael, and to John, and asked them if we can get 10% of the voters of Craven County to sign that, will that be an adequate tool to get this change done? Yep. So we've taken steps. We're beginning to proceed in the ways that we can do to try to solve the problem long term. Kim's idea of parents in District 7 showing up on the school board's doorstep is something that could happen much, much sooner than that.
And again, the immediate problem is that apparently the school board wants it both ways, restricted to a district, and then all of a sudden countywide, and then all of a sudden, no, we're going to pick whoever we want behind closed doors.
Exactly.
Yes.
And when it's a countywide vote, it also favors the incumbent. It makes it very difficult for a newcomer to get in.
And this all took place at a work session, the way I understand it, which was in the morning where very few people attend, and they don't allow people who are there, citizens who are there, to speak.
I looked at the agenda. The agenda said that they were going to have to declare a vacancy and that there was going to be a resolution. It said nothing about appointment or swearing in.
Exactly. Okay. So what we've got going on now is we got the issue where for school board, and we're speaking specifically Craven County, during the primary, only people in the district can vote for the person running in that district. Mm-hmm. But during the general election, countywide can vote. So you can vote for all the school board members and or all the districts anyway.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
I worked outside the polls talking to incoming voters, and many of us have done that. And it was abundantly clear to me that people did not know what they were supposed to do. That was very confusing.
It is confusing to them.
Not just a few, but large numbers of people.
Right. So what CCTA is doing, the Legislative Action Committee, is put together a petition. And as soon as we get feedback from our representatives on the petition, we'll get that posted up on cctaxpayers.com. We'll tell you about it here on the radio show, so that if you're in Craven County, we sure would like to have you participate
Absolutely.
In that, Kim.
I'd like to add that the other elected officials within the county, within Craven County, are elected by the district that they represent.
Exactly.
It is the school board.
Yeah.
That is the only elected office that is done in that way.
Right. And the majority of the counties across the state it's done by district. Like I said, Craven County is one of the few. So the crux of the petition is to take it back to doing it by district, both in the primary and in the general election. So we'll be hearing more about that in future.
And the other part of that thing is that we'd like to see it a partisan race. The notion that nonpartisan races, that very idea is an oxymoron. If people who belong to political parties help a candidate get elected, they expect that candidate to share their worldview, which is colored by the platform of the party. So to pretend that some races, judges, boards of education, are nonpartisan is just that. It's a pretense. Let's tell people where somebody is coming from to the extent it shows by their party registration.
I agree. All right, are we still going to continue moving backwards? Or are we?
No, because don't go back to the front.
All right, so we'll jump.
I'm sorry, that was just something that we've been working on, and I'm pleased with the progress.
That's going to be a big job for anybody listening out there
that has
the same view that we do. Get them to sign a petition.
So stay tuned so you can find out more about that. And let me stop right here because we jumped the gun getting going before I had the opportunity to make an announcement. After the first of the year, CCTA Wake Up Call will be rebroadcast Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. So if you hear something on the morning show, like you just heard about this, and you want to let your friends know that missed it, tell them to tune in at 8 o'clock.
Yay!
and they'll be able to hear it again. So keep listening for updates on the Craven County School Board issue. All right, let's jump back to the front. House Bill 2.
Yep, we thought that was put to bed appropriately. But apparently Roy Cooper is already muttering about he wants it rescinded. So if we need to get behind those people who don't want it rescinded, which I assume is still the majority, and give them support, we sure want to do that.
Right.
So it was interesting this past weekend in an analysis that when presented with the word HB2, people were not in favor of it. When presented with the wording of HB2, people were very much so in favor of it.
Oh, my goodness.
That's an interesting observation. I'm not surprised. Because the bad guys, what I think of as the bad guys anyway, have a history of denigrating, putting down, making fun of anything they don't like. They've been very busy little bees.
Well, the narrative that's been painted by the media is totally different than, like Bob says, mm-hmm. if you actually read the text of it
and
versus
what
you're hearing about on the... Yeah.
Well, in any case, it is so that people go to the shower room or the bathroom that matches their gender.
We know what it's about, exactly.
So it protects the privacy and safety of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's move on then to number two on the list, North Carolina Public Schools, and this covers a number of issues, Common Core Standards, Every Child Succeeds Act, and House Bill 588, which is the Founding Principles Act, all fall under that heading.
And other one that Strengthening Education Through Research Act, and those last two, Every Child Succeeds and Strengthening Education Through Research, are... not at all what they sound like. They're not good, but they are federal. So that's something I hope our National Legislative Action Committee will work on. Common Core is both, and I'm hoping what we have done to date is to tinker with it around the edges and change the name of it. We are still suffering under that rascal. And then the House Bill 588 is neither the letter nor the spirit of that law has been adhered to in any way, shape, or form. Our students do not know squat about our founding documents, our founding history, and there is very little posted in the schools. So that is a big job of work, and it is state.
Rain, I know you're right about that, but whatever happens at the national level is certainly going to affect what we are able to do with the state legislature this session. And we're all in hopes that the Department of Education will be changed a great deal at the national level so that maybe our fight at the state level will be a little easier to accomplish.
Well, the Donald has said send it back to the states, and I hope he means it.
Well, that's true, Howard, the first three, but House Bill 588 is North Carolina specific.
Yes, absolutely.
The Founding Principles Act requires in high school that they are taught about the founding documents and founding principles, the founding fathers. It lists specifically documents like the Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Ten Commandments, all of these things which are historical documents. I think the legislators did an excellent job when they crafted and passed House Bill 588.
Agreed.
The problem is it has not been enforced. The Department of Education got away with saying, oh, well, we do part of it in the sixth grade and part of it here and part of it there. That's not what the law asks.
Actually, they were have been very, very good at sidestepping it and pretending to adhere while they don't at all.
I talked to David Hale a few days ago. He's the new chairman of the Craven County Board of Education. And he said that they were taking some of our concerns in that regard to heart, and that they were going to be sure that those classes are taught in at least two grades, one in elementary school and one in high school. So I don't know, we'll wait and see, but...
That's great, but all they need to do is follow the letter of the law, because it is specific about what is to be done and when it's to be done.
Yeah. When this came in front of the General Assembly and the Joint Education Overreach Society over a year ago.
Oversight,
sorry about that.
That's okay.
What they ended up doing was combining the founding principles into their civics class, and that's how they got around the General Assembly's mandate on the law. Because up to that point, we were trying to follow the intent of the law, which said that they would have a full semester. But our joint oversight and the General Assembly allowed them to present their argument and agreed with them. So technically, they feel that they are in compliance, even though it's obvious that it's not the intent or the spirit of the law.
Not at all.
Does anyone feel that there is any push for a voucher program soon to get the students to be able to move to the school that they think is going to best educate them and take their money with them?
There is such a move in North Carolina, and it's expanded. It seems to be aimed mostly at children of lower income and lower opportunity sorts of situations. But I think that's something that the General Assembly seems to have been approaching incrementally, like they do so many things. We're impatient. We'd like to see it happen, wave a magic wand, because that would put a real competition among schools, because what we think of as failing schools, the parents would empty out.
I'd like to just throw in a caution. When we talk about choice, when we talk about vouchers, people really need to understand what it is they mean when they say choice. Is it choice of school or choice of curriculum?
Well, in this case, I think Bob was talking about choice of schools.
Choice of schools.
And when we're talking about vouchers. Now, I've been doing a lot of reading on this from the opposing sides. There's a lot of controversy about the choice of the Secretary of Education, whether she's pro-Common Core or against Common Core. And I've been reading both sides of it, and I do have concerns, major concerns on both sides of the issue. When we're talking about the voucher system, one thing the voucher system will do is it will help to destroy public education, number one. Number two, it will introduce the federal government into your charter schools, your private schools, your Christian schools. You will lose your autonomy once federal dollars get there.
So what makes you think it will destroy public education?
Well,
I'm very puzzled by that.
Because I think there's so many kids and parents that are unhappy with the school that their kids are going to, that they will pull their child out of that school and think, oh, I'm going to take my kid out of this school and put them into this Christian school where they will get the curriculum that I want them to have. However, if that school is getting federal dollars, it's still under the same mandate that any other public school would be. So it would be taking, it's basically just moving control from the local to a business community or to a federal community. I know there's a lot of discussion with this on every side, and I just think we need to be really vigilant and be careful what we ask for, because it might not be what we think it is.
I think we'd all agree with that, but you know, President-elect Trump has said that he wants to move the education down to the state level, and as far as I'm concerned, it'd be great if they moved it down to the local level. But one of the things I wanted to caution about, too, is that we, you know, we spent many hours talking to June Atkinson, Dr. June Atkinson, who was the superintendent of public instruction and lost in this last election. And we knew where she stood on things. We didn't agree with her most of the time, but we knew what our situation was. But with the incoming superintendent of public instruction, that's Mark Johnson, and I have met him, but he didn't want to discuss Common Core in any depth with me when I brought the subject up, so I'm still wondering where he stands on all these things. So we need to try to find that out as well.
Well, there's a lot of work to be done in this area of education, and we're going to have to move on, or we're not going to make it to the end of your list here. But going back to House Bill 588 real quick, do some research, folks, and find out about it and get on board and support it and demand that that law be enforced. Because I'm going to tell you, at the gun shows, one of the things we do is Hal or Randy or one of the people manning the booths there, when a school-aged child comes along, they'll ask them if they want to answer a few questions to win a prize. And they'll say sure or whatever, with their parents' permission, of course. And they'll ask them questions on our founding fathers and our the Constitution and some of the founding documents and all. And 9 times out of 10, if they're from public school, they can't answer the questions.
Yeah.
But if they're homeschooled, they answer them one right after the other, pass it with flying colors.
Absolutely.
So that's a big difference. It is an important issue. Let's move on now to Certificate of Need, also known as the Con Law.
Good name for it.
Very appropriately named. Well, the General Assembly seems to be taking the approach, instead of getting rid of it across the board, and talk about getting rid of it, let's talk about what it is first. It is a requirement that anybody who wants to do certain types of medical operating rooms, certain kinds of medical facilities, have to get from the state a certificate of need saying that this function is needed in your community and you are the entity to provide it. So it takes away competition. And in the case of a particular specialty providing that service over
like ophthalmology.
Right, that's an excellent example. I think that's one that'll come up this year. They could do cataract surgery within their own office suite to include surgical areas, much, much less expensive than you can have it done in a hospital, because they charge an enormous amount more money and can get it from Medicare. The additional thing about it is, okay, the cost would come down because of that, but actually the quality would tend to go up because the ophthalmologist staff is just dealing with those type things time after time after time. In a hospital operating room, the staff might do an appendectomy one time and the next patient is a cataract removal. They don't have the continuing work in one area of specialization, so it tends to not be the same quality that it might be if it were somebody who worked in that specialty.
Right. It's an area where the government is squelching private business and running the costs for us up just because of government involvement there.
In Massachusetts, when we lived in Massachusetts, Mary had one cataract surgery done in the Boston Eye and Ear Hospital. And then the other eye, when she had it done, it was done at a an eye surgical center. The cost was about one-third of the cost of having it done in the hospital.
Right.
And in the surgical center, a number of ophthalmologists all chipped in and had the surgical center. So each ophthalmologist got to practice for one day using the best technical equipment for that, and could do an operation about every 15 minutes. So at a third of the price, actually the doctor was making out better, and the patient was getting better quality service.
That perfect illustration.
A prime example of the harm that that certificate of need requirement can do is to consider the Belhaven Hospital.
Oh, yes.
And Vidant bought and operated a hospital in Belhaven, had a community hospital up there, and they decided that it was more economical for them to close that hospital and make those patients have to go by ambulance or whatever transportation they can get for about 35 miles further. They didn't want the two hospitals that were that close together, so they closed the one there in Belhaven. And, of course, the community just went berserk over that. The Board of Commissioners and everybody else have been fighting that and taking it to the General Assembly for about two sessions now without any great success at it so far. And the County Compass has run a whole series of articles that explains the situation in great depth, so I'd recommend people look at that on the internet if they get a chance. But the bottom line of it is the stockholders of the corporation that operated that hospital, the stock was given to four individuals who have agreed not to reopen the hospital. So what Biden wanted to be sure of was that hospital did not reopen.
Right.
That's what it was all about.
Right.
And now those four people have stated, according to the county compass, that they're going to tear the hospital down.
Wow. Okay, well.
So anyway, we're pushing to get the need for a certificate of need removed. And it's looking like ophthalmologists might go for them.
Right. This isn't just an issue here in North Carolina. Oh, no. This is a national issue, and many other states have already gotten rid of it.
Yes.
I want to say one more thing about it. Our state's legislators that we talk to quite frequently, we've made that obvious, have told us that they've taken nibbles out of it because it's too big a thing to get through all at once.
Well, the hospitals have tried to convince them that the small rural hospitals will be financially burdened. We're not seeing that. What we are seeing is hospitals sitting on large reserves of money.
Yes.
Nonprofit, my foot.
Chris Rainer, but the point I wanted to make was did take a nibble out of it in the last session, in that they broadened the mental health services that people could get without needing a certificate of need. So each session has taken some nibble out of it, so we're gradually moving in the right direction. We just have to stay on top of it.
And if you want to change those nibbles to big bites,
yes,
get involved, folks. Let your legislators know.
Yeah.
If you don't understand, what's the difference in you buying an aspirin in the hospital or at Walmart? Think about that.
The price is significantly
there you go.
Different.
So we're going to take a break here to hear from our sponsors. We'll be back and hit the rest of this list.
As a strong advocate of Second Amendment rights, CCTA is proud to be involved with S&D Gun and Knife Shows. The next S&D Gun and Knife Show will be at the American Legion Building in Jacksonville on Saturday, December 31st and Sunday, January 1st. Buy, sell, and trade with Eastern North Carolina's best dealers and enjoy the most competitive prices in the state. Most gun enthusiasts and collectors agree S&D Gun and Knife Shows are the place to be. The next show is December 31st and January 1st at the American Legion Building in Jacksonville. Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Panicelli's Pizzeria in Riverbend features handmade Italian dishes, lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in four sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. Panicelli's is easy to find. Just head to Riverbend and Panicelli's will be at 40 Shoreline Drive. For authentic Italian food at an affordable price, head to Panicelli's Pizzeria in Riverbend.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call, the place where patriots come to talk. Okay, we were talking about some legislative action that we have put together a list of proposed actions to take to our legislators, and we have gotten down to number four on the list, which is commercial fishermen and women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we met one.
Right. And recently,
Foster's a commercial fisherwoman.
Recently, Jerry Scheel with the North Carolina Fisheries Association. Is that right?
That's right. Right. That's right. North Carolina Fisheries.
North Carolina Fisheries Association indicated his angst at the fact that our governor had appointed some new people to the Fisheries Commission, and he wasn't real pleased about it.
They are very, very unkind in their thoughts about the industry.
Right.
He sees trouble looming on the horizon.
Full disclosure right here, North Carolina Fisheries Association is one of our sponsors. And we're proud that they are one of our sponsors, and we agree with them because we like North Carolina seafood. And so we support them wholeheartedly and without any reservation, but we want to make it clear that they are one of our sponsors, and we do have that association with them.
And, you know, they're clear about they don't want to have any practices that put the availability of seafood in jeopardy. I mean, it would be cutting off their noses to spite their faces, and they're not stupid people. They're bright people. But when they get into this crazy battle between commercial fishermen and sports fishermen.
Anglers are sometimes called.
Yeah. You have to kind of remember that commercial fishermen, their whole livelihood is at stake. With commercial fishermen, any of us who enjoy seafood, I've never caught a fish in my life, but I've eaten plenty of them,
right,
and I want to continue to.
Right.
Fresh, local caught seafood. Jerry Scheel's outfit is working for those kinds of things, and they are quite frankly very often under the gun from people who don't wish them any good. It is mainly coming from the so-called conservationists.
Right.
To my mind, they're flying under false colors. It's a pretend kind of thing. So I feel like we need to support Jerry. We need to support the people for whom
we
he's
do.
Working.
And these are hardworking people, and they've got a lot against them. You know, the weather, the seasonal stuff, a lot of issues. But government regulations, let's take, for example, the TED, the Turtle Exclusion Device.
Mm-hmm.
When we had talked to Jerry in an interview we did last year sometime, it was very interesting to find out how much the fishermen, the fishing industry, put into developing and perfecting those devices. I mean, so they're very on board with saving the environment and the turtles, and you know, but they still have to make a living.
Certainly.
Yeah, Rick, a few minutes ago you mentioned Jerry Scheel's angst at one of our meetings recently, and I'm glad you did, because a lot of what the North Carolina Fisheries Association does is to communicate with the Marine Fisheries Commission.
Right.
In fact, some of them serve on the Marine Fisheries Commission. And I just want to explain to our listening audience of what that is. The commission is a 9-member board appointed by the governor to manage, restore, develop, cultivate, protect, and regulate the state's marine and estuary resources. It does this by adopting rules and policies, implementing management measures for fisheries, and advising the state on marine fisheries within the jurisdiction of regional and federal boards and councils. And I guess one of us needs to explain what Gary's angst was with this commission. I guess I'll go ahead and do that.
Go ahead.
Jerry pointed out that he was really upset with the governor, Pat McCrory, because he appointed 3 more members of that commission that obviously have the bias toward the recreational fishermen, you know, and the anglers instead of the commercial fishermen. And that changes the balance of the board away from the commission of commercial fishermen over to the recreational fishermen. That's what he was so upset about. And he couldn't understand why McCrory would do that.
Again, we moved down from Massachusetts, Bob and Mary. We moved down from Massachusetts about 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, and we watched New Bedford be decimated as the fishing quotas were just totally confined within offshore of New England. And all of a sudden, a fisherman, a commercial fisherman that really had a, you know, a mortgage on his boat, he's got a lot of bills to pay, and he's got to pay it whether he's got fish or no fish. And to have the regulations, again, regulations, not laws, but to have regulations all of a sudden put him out of the fishing business, and yet he still has to pay his bills. That was very, very unfair to the fishermen up there, and a lot of fishermen lost their boats, lost all income. And I don't want to see the same thing happen down here.
Well, to give an example of how intrusive those regulations can get, you know, most of us went to one of those commission meetings where they were discussing what other states do in great depth. They had somebody came up, I forgot, from somewhere, Louisiana or somewhere, Texas, I forgot. Anyway, a guy who purported, another coastal state, who purported to be giving advice to this commission about something they should do. And that was to put a federal agent on every single boat that was fishing in the sounds in nearby coastal waters, to make sure that their regulations and that their rules were followed, and they had to pay for them. The boat captain boat owner would have to pay for that federal agent to be on his boat all the time.
Whatever happened to the presumption of innocence?
And most of us talked against that, and I think to credit of people that belong to CCTA, that thing got bombed pretty fast at that point. So we're still one of the very few states that doesn't have that regulation.
Right. Well, it's another issue that folks, you really need to get involved in, because it affects you. It's going to affect your ability to be able to buy seafood, as Rainer pointed out. If you are in a fishing community, it's going to affect the survival of your community. And if you are a commercial fisherman, it's definitely, you're already involved. You already know what's going on.
You don't need to tell them a thing. They can tell us a thing. The ncfish.org is the fisherman's website. People can join it who aren't fishermen. If you like seafood, you might want to join
it. That's right. If you want to help in this battle, then ncfish.org. And go in there and join that fight.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
If you like local seafood, because local seafood is not tainted the way, if you watch some of the articles about how offshore or was it the Asian Rim
seafood
is altered to make it look bigger, better, whatever else. I don't necessarily like eating that stuff.
Right.
Rick, didn't you mention that we could put a something on our own website where people could go in and take a poll and
we'll look into doing that. CCTaxpayers.com, folks. Would behoove you to visit that on a regular basis, as Hal's watchdog reports are updated up there all the time. Our vetting reports.
And I made sure all of them are up there.
Right. Our legislative action efforts that we're talking about now. When we get ready to take a trip to Raleigh and we take a group with us, we'd like for you to join us, so we'll start posting those up there. So let's move on down the list so we can get some more of this in. Next one on the list is property insurance, and you know, we'd like to see a reasonable relationship between premiums for homeowners insurance and claims paid out in each region of the state.
And that's not happening.
Right, especially
we
here
are
at the
overpaying.
Coast.
Based on, there's room for profit and paying out claims, more room in our region than there are in some of the other regions of the state. It's not very well balanced.
And, you know, we've had a lot of meetings and discussions on some of this stuff. A lot of the science that's being used is not real science. Projections based on opinions and theories.
The theory of sea level rise.
There you go.
And in many cases, FEMA is moving to treat it as if it's real.
Right.
Well, if it's real, keep tabs on what's happening and base it on the real world as it exists, not some cockamamie theory.
And they're passing regulations based on this perceived threat.
Yeah, and that gets into something, again, that's federal, that Bigger Waters Act.
Right.
Mike Causey, who is the Commissioner of Insurance-elect, was one of the candidates that we were able to fortunate enough to vet. And I think that's a ray of hope, because one of the biggest things that he had to say was that he was in favor of opening up the insurance industry in North Carolina to other companies located in other states, and to break up this Blue Cross Blue Shield monopoly. Now, not that they're in property insurance all that much, but that's just an example that I think him being the Commissioner of Insurance is going to be a ray of hope for all of our insurance concerns in North Carolina.
Actually, Hal, I've been thinking that our Legislative Action Committee should probably visit Mike Causey, because in it may be that he can help correct the situation, and if to the extent that he can't, guide us in what we ask the General Assembly to do about it.
I'd like to give one more example, and I'll shut up and let Bob talk. I know Bob's wanting to talk. And just as an example, because I'm more familiar with Craven County than anywhere else, 1,500 more houses were located from the last FEMA flood reports in the flood zones in Craven County than had been before. Now, 500, for some reason, were taken out of the flood zones. But you still have a net of 1,000 more homeowners going to be paying outrageous flood insurance through FEMA.
Yeah.
Because of and it's not the one that's a huge, the Bigger Waters thing. That's not that one. It's just they say this is only based on experience in recent floods.
Well, they're playing games with which storms they base the numbers on. Figures don't lie, but liars can figure. You can take numbers and manipulate them and achieve just almost any end result you want.
Yep.
These people are great at it.
They are. Bob?
A couple of years ago, we had a guest speaker. Willow Kelly came from the Outer Banks, and she's involved in real estate there, and she was fighting the insurance rates based on wind damage. Well, that we're paying much higher wind damage rates here in coastal Carolina than the inland Carolina is for wind damage. However, that the insurance rates don't recognize that the coastal building codes require stronger built houses than the inland does. So we're paying higher rates but not getting the equivalent benefit of that. And
you're paying higher insurance rates, plus you're paying higher cost of construction for your dwelling.
As Rainer pointed out, there's no relationship between the claim experience and the actual rates. So what's the sense in that?
The process for determining the rates is not an open process.
That's right. Okay, Rainer, I think you had a great idea. We do need to visit Mike Causey, our new Commissioner of Insurance, and as well as our legislators, and get some action going on that. Next on the list is economic development.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. We could use some of that, couldn't
we? We surely could. But we need to be very, very careful about how it gets done. Lowering taxes and reducing regulations works across the board. If you let the governor or anybody else, but typically state level, it's been the governor, what they refer to jokingly as walking around money. They give him a pot of money, and he can pick a particular business to give incentives to come to North Carolina. Well, that money comes from all North Carolinians' pockets. It comes from our small business owners. It comes from mom and pop people who are just dying to start their own businesses, but they can't afford it because they're paying taxes through the nose. It is totally unfair and wrong. So our state government needs to create a good climate for business and then get the heck out of the way and let the chips fall wherever they fall. Don't pick this business or that business or the other business to give money to.
Right. Or social agendas.
Exactly. So that's something that we are constantly making them aware of. And they don't always listen to us.
Right. It was Representative Michael Spicciola that coined that walking around phrase. And when he first went up there, he used that to beat that down in the first legislative session.
Yes.
And then they turned around later and went back and gave the governor a whole bunch of, quote, walking around money. So that was a shame.
There was one General Assembly session where, and it, Michael sold the idea. He really did. I heard his speech when he talked about it from the floor of the House and shamed them into voting no. It turned it around on the spot. Then the following session, they got it back again. Well, we want it gone again.
Well, I often talk to a businessman who complains, certainly I think legitimately, that they never do anything to help the small business person, but look at the, what they did to help mowing out there at the Craven County Industrial Park, $880,000 worth of reduced cost for the real estate as opposed to what it was valued at, and grants that they gave them with the hope of getting a few employees. It just isn't right.
Picking
winners and losers, and that's about what it boils down to.
And that's not a government function.
Exactly.
All right, here's one that's going to be near and dear to a lot of hearts out there, constitutional carry.
Yep.
CCTA has long been a proponent of constitutional carry.
The Constitution is my permit.
The Constitution is your gun permit, absolutely.
Larry Pittman brought that up in the last session, and he is reportedly going to do it again. Michael Spashali was one of the original sponsors of the bill. He said he's going to do it again. Norm Sanderson says he supports it. He's not certain whether offering a companion bill in the Senate at the same time is the best strategy or just exactly how he's going to approach it, but they're all tuning up to work on it, and we are certainly in their corner, and we want to make that very clear.
NRA rates Larry A.
Well, they should.
So let those representatives and your representatives know that you stand behind them on that. Hopefully you do. A number of states already have constitutional carry. I mean, it's not real hard. I mean, shall not be infringed.
Yeah. And a point here for people who perhaps hunt in other states and are crossing state lines with firearms. The way Larry's bill was written, the prior session that he worked on it, it allowed permits to be issued, concealed carry or what have you, for reciprocity.
Right. And
but
that
within
issue,
the state, we wouldn't. There would be no
right.
requirement.
And
for it.
To that issue, one of North Carolina's congressmen at the federal level is putting in a bill for a national reciprocity.
Yes,
I just make a real quick comment here too. Grassroots North Carolina is a organization that functions purely focused on protecting state North Carolina state gun rights, and I just ask people to check them out. They're somebody we align with in terms of their perspective, and that's really the only association, but we would ask you to look into them because
absolutely
we've got a lot of alignment with them.
Well, the CCTA voted to support their effort, and especially at our gun shows and things like that. So, they're an associated
organization. One comment I'd like to make about that national reciprocity thing. Normally, I'm very much against some at a national level saying all states are going to do this, that, or the other thing. But in this particular case, the Constitution doesn't say the federal government shall not. It's there shall be no
right.
infringement. So that is across the states, and it's not a government overreach
right.
to do that.
But, back years ago, the states used to get together and make supporting agreements among themselves for a lot of these kind of things. FEMA was one as an example that before FEMA got so active in taking care of everybody that had any storm damage, it used to be a state-level function for the most part. Loans were done by FEMA, but nothing else.
Yeah.
And so Maryland and Virginia and several other states, North Carolina, entered into compacts with each other to support each other in those efforts. And I was a part of it when I was in the Virginia National Guard. I knew about it and helped work on it.
Okay, so get on board with the constitutional carry effort. Contact your representatives on that. Moving right along, voter ID. Now, this is something that you, the majority of the voters of this state of North Carolina, sent a loud and clear message when they voted for voter ID.
Yeah.
It was passed. It became law in North Carolina. And one appointed judge, not an elected judge, an appointed judge, has overturned that. So we're looking at trying to get it reinstated. And Rainer?
I think the route it will probably take is that it'll be heard by the Supreme Court after President-elect Trump has nominated nomination's been confirmed to the Supreme Court.
You know, one of the ironic things about it is some of the states that have a voter ID law in place modeled their law on the North Carolina law.
And we had particularly high minority voting in the primary when we were using it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people pretending that there's some negative reason for voter ID is a fabrication.
It is a fabrication.
Its sole intent is to allow people who are eligible to vote freely and no one else.
I just heard today in one of the states where they were demanding a recount, that they came up with more votes than they had registered voters.
Yeah,
so if you don't think there's a problem...
Was it Detroit?
Detroit, 37% of the precincts had more voters than... more votes than voters.
Uh-huh, yeah, you tell me. Voter fraud, nothing to see here, right?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Well,
you all touched lightly there on the judgeships, and, you know, Judge Edmonds was not reelected into the North Carolina Supreme Court. And our legislation, North Carolina legislature, is in session today.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it'll be again tomorrow or not. Not sure. They did have a session today. And one of the things that has been speculation that they might consider is increasing the number of justices on the North Carolina Supreme Court to 9 in order that Governor McCrory, while he is still the governor, can appoint those additional 2.
I'd love to see him do that.
Well, that's one of the things. It's controversial, though. I've heard a lot of people who I think are pretty conservative are not in favor of doing that because they say, well, then we'd be doing the same thing that we accuse the Democrats of doing and you know, the liberal socialist type people, I guess I should use that
phrase. They would not be changing the Constitution. They would not be changing the law. They would be acting within the purview of things as they are structured now. So how can that be so wrong?
Well, we'll see how that turns out, but I thought I'd just like to mention that because it could happen very soon.
Right.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Have you got a topic you'd like to hear discussed on CCTA Wake Up Call? Well, then contact us at cctaxpayers.com or email hal@cctaxpayers.com. That's hal@cctaxpayers.com. We're a conservative talk radio show, but we value your opinion and would love to have you join us. Again, contact hal@cctaxpayers.com. The next one on the list, a political party of candidate listed for all judge races. You talked about that in the first part there, the nonpartisan being an oxymoron.
Yep, sure is.
So you want to have the judges listed...
Absolutely, because you know, when you know their party, you know what their party's platform is about, you know what that political party tends to push for, so you know certain things about the likely attitude of the person. Full disclosure, why hide some of this stuff?
All right.
Well, haven't we heard from our state legislatures that they'll probably take that up in the coming legislation and hopefully get all the judges to be...
That's my understanding,
yeah.
And I sure want to see that day.
Right.
Okay, well, we're about to run out of time here, and I want to make sure we get this one covered. This is the last one on your list here, I believe, number 10?
Yep. Well,
No, there's one more after, but we want to get this one covered, and that's amending the North Carolina Constitution. Rainer, explain to us why we would want to do that.
All right. Article 1 has 3 sections in it that are related, and yet they're contradictory. Section 2 says that all political power is derived from the people. so it is, that's perfect. It needs to be left just so. The two things that are in conflict with it is Section 4 prohibits secession and says that we shall forever remain a member of the American Union. Well, I hope we always want to, but it is up to the people. The people are sovereign. Delete that. Just be silent right on that subject. Section 5 says every citizen of the state owes paramount allegiance to the Constitution, I'm fine with that, and to the government of the United States. Well, the government of the United States sometimes behaves well, sometimes behaves ill. I do not have a primary allegiance to those people.
Right.
The principles that we were founded upon, yes. The people, no. That's another section that just needs to be gone.
That was probably a requirement after the Civil War for re-entry into the Union.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were forced to do that. And it's high time we got rid of it.
Right. Well, let's look at today's situation. Do you think the people that are rioting and just raising Cain all over the place and just can't get over the fact that Donald Trump is going to be president of the United States, are they going to live by that?
No.
Are they going to have full allegiance to the government now? You know,
I've heard him say, not my president.
Right. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen. There's possibilities that you could end up with a dictator, which we almost had in the last 8 years, that just with a pen and a telephone could do anything he wanted to do.
Doing things well beyond what he's been authorized
right
to do by the
so
Constitution.
Right. So you want to be bound to having to show
no,
your allegiance?
No, I don't. As
there.
A matter of fact, I decline to.
Right.
I am a sovereign human being.
Just trying to show where you were going with that.
A lot of liberal people try to convince you that the Second Amendment is there to allow you to protect your life. Actually, founders put the Second Amendment there more to enable the people to protect themselves against a tyrannical government.
Absolutely.
Than they did the bears and the animals that they faced.
They had just come through throwing off the yoke of a tyrannical government, and it was very fresh in their minds.
Right. They had experience
that power
with it.
Left.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rainer, let's touch this last one for about a minute because that's all the time we got left, and that's interposition and nullification.
Right, and it is the right of a state to interpose itself, the state government, between a federal government that is overreaching, doing things well beyond what the Constitution has assigned them to do, and the people of that state. And I'm hoping, we're all hoping, that there's going to be less need for it going forward than there has been in the past. But there, we need our state government to understand that when that is needed and the federal government is overreaching, it's an appropriate action for them to take, and we want them to take it.
Right. And that's going back to House Bill 588, the importance of educating our young people on our founding documents, on our Constitution. Sadly, today, a lot of people believe the federal government is the highest authority. The Supreme Court is the highest authority. And no, it's not. A lot of people don't realize the most powerful elected official in the country is your county sheriff.
Yeah.
He can tell a federal agent, get out of my state.
Certainly.
We're not going to uphold that here.
And the federal government.
Out of my county, yes.
Is the law of the land so long as that law was made pursuant to the Constitution. If it were outside the boundaries of what was assigned to that government entity by the Constitution, then it is on its face null and void, and we are free to ignore it.
Glenn, real quick.
Yeah, I'd just like to say the listeners of this show now is a broad audience, and a lot of us that are really active have the same state legislators, the state representatives, and the same state senators. But as we broaden out the listener group, as you talk to your representatives and your senators, and there's a common theme from Eastern North Carolina going to Raleigh, we have had a great impact as CCTA. But that influence can be huge if we get a broader audience
Absolutely.
Doing those same things and we look forward to that.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's been a great discussion. Those are the issues that our Legislative Action Committee, our State Legislative Action Committee, will be taking up in the upcoming year. And we hope to get some additional help out of you guys out there that are listening. Again, cctaxpayers.com. You can get all kinds of information about Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association. And don't forget, after the first year, you'll be able to hear us rebroadcast at 8 p.m. on Sunday evenings. That's all we have for today. Have a good week. You're listening to CCTA Wake Up Call right here on The Talk Station, FM 107.1 WTKF Atlantic. CCTA Wake Up Call is a production of Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, and you can join us here every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for the best in conservative talk radio in Eastern North Carolina. That's CCTA Wake Up Call.